Welcome to Season 5 of the Life Giver Podcast, a place for honest conversation and hope that will breathe life back into your military or first responder marriage. Welcome to the Life Giver Podcast. This is Season 5 and your host, Corey Weathers. I am so excited to have you guys back for another season. And I have a fantastic interview today with Heather Ely with Project Sanctuary. One of the things that we're trying to do in Season 5 is really highlight some exceptional resources so that so many of you guys out there listening have access to those resources and can find them and know that you have help out there if you need it. And I could not be more excited than to have Heather with us today. She doesn't know this, but I have been following and tracking what Project Sanctuary has been doing for a long time. I've not had the honor to go to one of their retreats, but Jennifer, who has joined the Life Giver team, definitely has. And so I know she had a great experience. So my excitement about Project Sanctuary paired with Jennifer's experience, we brainstormed and we knew we had to have Heather join us for Season 5. So Heather, you're catching up to all of our excitement about what you're doing, but I really would love to just invite you to the podcast and say hello and thank you for being here and give you a chance to tell your story. So thank you for being with us.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for everything that you have done, creating awareness, spreading resources, all your fabulous work. I'm absolutely honored to be here today. And yeah, happy 2020. It's a new year.
I know, right? Like now somebody had posted something that if you do a signature and put your name on there, that if you put 20 on the end, you've got to put now 2020 because somebody can go back and change the date. And I had not even thought about it. So now I have so much anxiety with 2020 changing and OPSEC and all those things. No, I am actually very excited to have you here. I would love for you, Heather, to share your story as the founder of Project Sanctuary. And I'm a huge storyteller. And I think our stories is really what brings the passion to what we do and why we do it. So if you wouldn't mind, I would love to just have you take us back and tell us a little bit about where did the idea behind Project Sanctuary come up? And maybe you ought to start off actually with telling everybody a little bit about what Project Sanctuary is doing right now, and then go back and tell us how you started it, if that would be okay.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. So Project Sanctuary, we're one of those that supports military families through therapeutic retreats, mental health, follow-up services. We have retreats across the country. We'll be doing 32 this year, which is our new record high. And we really believe that the whole family serves, and the best way for the family to heal is together. So we blend in recreation with mental health. We have licensed counselors, which is so important in a new program. Rec therapists make the whole world just a little bit better. And then really, we just take a cue from our family. So we built in at least a 2-year family support program because they kept calling and saying, Miss Heather, can you help me with this? Miss Heather. So we really listen to our families and build the programs around what we're seeing and what they're telling us that they need.
And that would be what I would say is one of my favorite things about what you guys are doing. And that's just great follow-up care. It's very rare to find those that are doing great retreats out there, but the follow-up is really what matters, right? It's what happens after the retreat and what happens to families as far as taking those next steps and whatever it is that they're needing from home to be able to continue the work that they did during those retreats. And that's what I think you guys are doing that's different. So Heather, why don't you take us back and tell us how did you come up with the idea of Project Sanctuary? What's the story behind it?
Okay, so I am actually a registered nurse, and a long time ago, before 9/11, back when it was Desert Storm time, I was nursing in a really small clinic up in the mountains in Colorado, and just volunteering my time helping out as an RN, and all of a sudden this military doc shows up, Dr. Crislip, and he's a little bit out there. And so a lot of the other nurses really didn't want to work with him. I liked him. I thought he was funny. He was sometimes inappropriate because he was a Vietnam doctor. He was quite the character. But with Dr. Crislip, all of a sudden military families started showing up to get answers about what we now know as Gulf War illness. So my memory is seeing the lab work come back and having everything on the lab sheet be abnormal. And I would look at Dr. Crislip and go, oh my God, where do we even begin? This is real. They're not making this up. And he would just laugh and go, this is war, Heather. And, but it wasn't just the veteran sitting in the waiting room. It was typically the spouse and two kids sitting there. and they would have driven from Nebraska or Wyoming, and they're finding this tiny clinic up in Estes Park, Colorado, looking for answers. And as a civilian, I kept thinking, why is this happening? Why are we not taking care of our veterans? Who's taking care? This is not acceptable that they're having to come to us. So that really stuck with me. And then, of course, 9/11 changed everybody's world and view. And by then, I was doing quite well. I'd moved to Denver, had the big golf house. I was flipping agencies. So I used my RN in a business sense. And I kept reading about the families. And for me, I had that visual of families in need and families begging for help. So I Googled, where do I send a big check? I want to help out an organization that's helping military families. And I got zip zero back. Nobody was paying attention to the families. And my background as hospice and home care is you empower the family. You use community resources. Mm-hmm. You set them up to win. You teach them things. And so it just kept bugging me that no one was paying attention and no one was doing anything. And long story short, I just pulled the trigger, started a nonprofit, and here we go.
Did you build out the pipeline that you have right now that includes that follow-up care? Did you build that out as you went, as you heard from those families? How did Project Sanctuary first start? What was your first programming like?
So we put up a really pretty website, and a lot of organizations do this. We're going to build a retreat center. And mm-hmm. so that was our focus. We're going to build a retreat center. And then I had no interest really in writing programming. I was just going to build a retreat center and let military families come. But military families started contacting me going, hey, that's a really beautiful website, but I need help now. What can you do now? Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, I don't have a retreat center. They're like, well, sorry, but I need help now. And so I called YMCA of the Rockies. I called a couple of people and I'm like, all right, I've got to put together a retreat. And honestly, it was just sitting down with the families going, tell me your story and how can I help? What do you need? Because when I started Project Sanctuary, I honestly didn't know any current military families. I knew a couple of Vietnam veterans, but I didn't know any families when I started. So the key always has been listening to what the families mm-hmm. need and then doing our darndest to provide mm-hmm. what they need in a timely, quality manner. And that's what we do. That's how we built the whole program. I just thought we were going to ride horses, but they said, no, we need help with our marriage. No, we need help with finances. No, can you do something with my teenager? And I'm like, ah. And then as I said earlier, they kept asking for follow-up resources and support. And so we built that in. And now actually all the families pre-retreat are offered the exact same quality services and support and case management before they even get to us.
Which is unbelievable. And I know takes a lot of manpower and a lot of heart for you guys to be able to do all of that. But I know what it's like to follow families over the course of years and how much joy it can bring to you to see a family evolve over time, to see a marriage evolve. So I'm sure the stories that you guys have coming out of what you guys have created is fantastic. So why don't we talk a little bit about like what are, maybe walk everybody through that pipeline. I know it's probably different for each family, but when you have somebody getting those case management in the beginning, what does that look like for a family who's maybe interested in coming to one of your retreats? What does that pre-touch, if you will, look like?
So our whole program is human-centric and family-centric because no two families are alike. No two people are alike. So it really depends. Some people don't want any help before they get to the retreat and they walk through the doors at the retreat and then all heck breaks loose. Some of them are very specific. They know exactly what they need and we're able to provide that, whether that be counseling or food in the refrigerator or their car's broken down, they can't get to their VA appointment. Or they have a suicidal teenager at home and where are the resources and how can we help? And so that's both pre-retreat and post-retreat. So we try to get the families in a stable place prior to the retreat. We're reaching out, calling each family pre-retreat. What are your concerns? What are your questions? Because it is scary. They're going to a therapeutic retreat mm-hmm. to talk about their issues with counselors. It's not a vacation. Anybody wants to go on a vacation. It takes mm-hmm. real courage to sign up and to actually show up and work the program because we're not about entitlement and free vacations and manicures and pedicures. That's not us. We're about counseling and, okay, what are your goals? What are your obstacles? How are we going to get there? This is your new battle buddy. And she may look like your wife, but she's your new battle buddy. What's your new plan? What are you going to do? Hands off to the families. They're quite amazing.
Obviously brave to be able to show up and do what I would call an intensive, to be able to have that kind of counseling. Because I think you're doing not only individual counseling, you can do couple counseling while they're there, family counseling if it's needed. But it's really a wraparound approach while they also get to do things that are fun. Right. They get to do things that are multi-sensory that gets them kind of out of their mind a little bit and maybe even out of their issues some. So once they get to the retreat, what are some of those other things that they get to do?
Yeah, I always say that nothing promotes healthy communication like sticking a family in a whitewater raft and sending them down the river.
I'm sure. Yes.
We'll get to the heart of some communication right there. So the retreats are 6 days in length. We start off with a nice orientation. What do you want to leave at the door? What do you want to take with you? Tell your story to the group. Let's get to know everybody. Let's start off the retreat in an impactful way with some direction. We usually have the next day a big group activity. So it depends where we are in the country, whether that's zip lining through the redwoods or snowmobiling over the Rockies or horseback riding or fishing. We build our recreation in 3 different levels. So it's a once in a lifetime opportunity, a big wow factor with things that if they save their money, they could do like horseback riding. And then obviously free things like just taking a hike. Walking outdoors. Mm-hmm. So our schedule's built on purpose. The first 2 days we'll have class time. Our classes are limited to 2 hours simply because I can't sit still longer than 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And those living with post-traumatic stress and traumatic brain injury, that would be really tough for them to sit through no PowerPoints either. So we keep the classes mm-hmm. very mm-hmm. interactive. We cap it at 2 hours. The adults, the first 2 days are taught and they get to practice communication skills, relationship skills, things that they can build on throughout the week. The therapeutic youth program, the kids are talked to on the same level, and so are the therapeutic teens. So they're all talking about relationships and communication so that later in the week, the teenager, and it's happened, will look right at the parents and go, mom, speaker, listener, hello.
So that's really amazing that you do that for everybody.
Yes.
And that the kids are getting, I mean, I don't know how many calls I get that they might, I mean, first of all, just trying to find a mental health clinician in their area that they feel like understands their world, which is why I started that whole clinician directory. But then on top of that, to try to find somebody that can work with teens, that can work with kids, that understands the lifestyle as well is so hard. So to be able to come to a retreat center where you have everything that you need, plus some fun, plus some things for you to do that kind of gives everybody a chance to connect is really, really amazing. It sounds like you have not only the workshops and the counseling individually, but the kids are doing sometimes something separate just for them, or at least getting counseling just for them.
Right. Just during the 2 hours each day. The rest of the time, it's all okay. About activities and family meals and bonding, meeting other families, doing what they need to move themselves forward as a family. The third day, our probably most impactful class is our post-traumatic growth class. We separate at just 2 hours, everybody separated, but the adults, so it's not just the veterans talking about their post-traumatic stress, but they're talking about it with their spouses in a group setting. So sometimes when a veteran says it in a different way, then all of a sudden the spouse gets it. She's like, oh, wow, now I understand what my husband's been trying, and vice versa. We teach them that, mm-hmm. Everyone has trauma. There's a lot of times that the spouses are sitting on stories that they haven't felt comfortable sharing with their veteran. So we provide that opportunity in a safe place so that they can talk about some really painful things and tools and tips and ways to move forward. The teenage post-traumatic stress class, we only have a licensed counselor do that one because holy cow. The kids are talking about self-harm. They're talking about suicide attempts. And how do I talk to my friends about this? And I've got another friend that is really traumatized. And to be able to empower and give them tools and to validate their feelings is just huge. Mm-hmm. The last day, of course, we talk about finances. We have a financial class so that we get everybody on the same page. A lot of times money problems are more about personality than it is about actual tools and money coming in. So we take a unique approach in that direction as well. But yeah, lots of laughter, lots of hard work. A family comes in and it's up to them to have a good retreat. We just provide the opportunity.
I love that you said that. There has to be that buy-in. There has to be their willingness to come in and actually do that hard work and actually invest in the hard work that needs to be done during the week. So I'm so glad that you guys point that out. Now you mentioned that there's different locations. You said, I think, did you say 32 in the next year, correct? And so do you partner with some of these other places or does Project Sanctuary have these different locations throughout the US?
I haven't gotten the first one yet. and as you were speaking about earlier, it's so hard to find counselors and mental health help that's culturally competent. So we have partnered with retreat centers across the country that are culturally competent, that understand what we're doing or are willing to learn. They also have to have some buy-in. I want to partner with people that are going to give me a discount, not only because it's financially responsible, but because then they understand what we're doing and they want to help. So we have beautiful locations across the country. We joke that we're Project Sanctuary. We're not Project Mediocre.
I love that.
And that helps with the healing process. When you walk to some place, when you're there for 6 days and you're just amazed at the redwoods, or you get to look at the ocean, or you're up in the Colorado Rockies or the Blue Ridge Mountains. Even Texas is pretty when you got the fields of flowers. And so we choose places that really help de-escalate and de-stress the families immediately. And then they have to build in the recreation and the space. But yeah, we're so blessed to have so many amazing partners in 8 different states to be able to host these retreats.
In the show notes for this conversation, this episode, we'll do our best to kind of point out whatever you have available as of right now, as far as links that people can go to if you're interested in, to be able to maybe see where Project Sanctuary is going to be maybe in 2020. We'll make as much of that available as we have, or as much as you have ready for that this year. But I think it's great because it's one thing to start in one place, but I'm sure you've experienced just more and more people need the help, but maybe are across the country and can't get to Colorado or can't get to a certain place. And so being able to spread out just a little bit, I think, well, at least from my experience in working with retreats in different locations, what I have found is that once you figure out exactly what you need your programming to look like in order for that family to heal, whether it's the 2 hours a day or this amount of recreation time or touching on the finances, those little pieces that you know for sure that you need to have in, it really doesn't matter where you go as long as you have the right elements in place that you have found that work. That's where the magic happens, because you're right. It's what people bring to the retreat, their willingness to work hard. It's the heart to save your family or save your marriage. That's what actually makes the retreat fantastic. And so I love that you guys found that battle rhythm for you guys and the pipeline that works for you and the approach that works for your families, so that you can do it in so many different places. And there's also excitement, I think, in being able to do it in one place that has this set of recreation opportunities, and then to be able to see another place have a different set, a whole other different set of experiences for a family, but they still are healing. It's such an amazing ride. I think on the programming side, I'm just going to speak from somebody who kind of like you works on the other side of programming. It's such a joy to see something you've worked so hard in that it's working, especially regardless of where you go. Do you feel that way sometimes?
And we call it the magic. And I don't know how it continues to happen, but it does. Our retreat scores are off the chart. We survey everybody. We're very much into outcomes and metrics and taking a look and making sure that our quality program in California matches up with our quality program in Georgia. And I'll be amiss if I don't mention that the other part of the magic that makes it happen is my incredible staff. The Project Sanctuary Retreat team is amazing. They care so much about each individual and each family, and it's authentic, and it comes through. The passion for what they're able to do for a living, hands down, is really another thing that totally sets us apart. We are so blessed with the best clinicians, the best counselors, the best rec therapists. And then our families, once they go through the program, they can come back and volunteer. And that just adds a whole nother level of a really understanding and being able to provide. And after each retreat, we do our AARs and we take the feedback from the families. And after every single retreat, we tweak something to make it just a little bit better because the families are still building the program. We didn't want to do a therapeutic teen program. Are you kidding me? No other organization on the planet wants to do that. But our families ask us to develop something and create something. And we listened, and it's really been quite amazing. So,
well, do you have maybe any stories that you could share, maybe without sharing someone's personal information, which I know you'd be protective of anyways, but is there anything that you can share with those that are listening, maybe somebody's experience that did make it public of what their experience with Project Sanctuary is, maybe something that you love to kind of share with donors or people that want to know, what does it look like for a family to transform and evolve over time with Project Sanctuary?
Okay. Yeah. So Ronnie, and he lets me use his real name because he works for me on and off and he doesn't care. Most of these families, when I tell their story, I do get to use their name because they want their stories told, and I have gotten permission. You're right. So Ronnie was the typical angry veteran. He served, Army, Ranger, 19 and a half years, tons of deployments and special missions, and was medically retired at 19 and a half years, where he went home and sat in the basement and stared at his uniform because he did not know who he was anymore. So he had planned to kill himself. He knew when his wife was going to be out of town, and he was in his basement, and she changed her plans and walked downstairs. She drug Ronnie to a retreat, kicking and screaming. He did not want to go. He did not participate. He didn't speak to anybody. He stood in the corner with his arms crossed. He was not going to have fun, period. But he did listen. And his son, during a therapeutic exercise, drew a picture of the family. And he had himself and his mom and his sister on one side and the angry veteran on the other side with red flames coming out of his head. Well, that didn't sit well with Ronnie. So he called me about 2 or 3 days after his retreat and said, "Miss Heather, I'm not okay with that picture. I'm not okay with anything. I need help." So because Ronnie was still classified, we sent him to a private practitioner. And he did his work. He did 90 days of intense psychotherapy. And then he started volunteering. He started doing better. He still has his ups and his downs, and he still ends up in the basement, but not for as long and not as intensely. Ronnie's taught me a lot about healing and constantly reinventing himself, and what works this week may not work next week. But the other part of this story was, in order to bridge the gap and heal that relationship with his son, he started bringing his son to retreats. And so his son was able to grow up in a therapeutic environment, rebond with his dad, understand what's going on. And then of course his son decided to enlist and is now deployed and is now married and now has a child of his own. And so I'm watching, I know it's mind blowing, but my kids from my therapeutic youth program who are sitting there with crayons are now deploying. But what I'm watching, my kids are doing better because their parents have broken that mold. They've changed the trajectory. They want something better for their families. They've taught their kids it's okay to talk about mental health. It's okay to take care of yourselves. It's okay to focus on the family. And my kids that are now deploying seem to be doing pretty good.
It's amazing. You've changed the entire family tree just by healing a father and son relationship. And again, I'm stressing this not for you, Heather, because you know why you've been doing what you've been doing, but I'm stressing it for those that are listening, how powerful it is to have an organization that reaches out before you even enter into any care that they've been get that they're there to offer, but then to have that follow-up, because just like the story that you were just saying, it was in the follow-up, right? Ronnie was still in that place of resistance that was really struggling. And I'm sure so many listening right now, you probably have drug your spouse to a retreat or to a marriage retreat or something like that before, to church, who knows, right? But you've all probably had that experience of the resistance when one of you in the marriage is needing the help and is desperate for the help and the other one just isn't there yet. And what I see time and time again, it's really coming, it comes down to relationship. It comes down to safety and authenticity, like you said about your staff, that Ronnie felt safe enough and felt close enough to reach out to you and say, I don't know what I need, but I need the next thing because I just need things to be different. Right. And had he not had a good relationship built with you and that trust established because of the retreat, he would have not reached out. It was in the follow-up that you were able to make the biggest difference. It's just more introducing the relationship. So how powerful that is to heal a father and son, to heal him and at least spend time with him on that journey, because healing does take sometimes a lot of time. It's not something that can happen in a week.
Absolutely. And it is the relationship and the trust. I would love, and I think we're getting really close to the money and the ability to do this, but to be able to compare our pre-retreat families with our post-retreat families and the follow-up and see the quality mm-hmm. of the follow-through and who does that. Does that better. So a lot of times, even with the follow-up, they'll say, okay, I really want to go do this. And we're like, yeah, but, or we could address the TBI that you don't think you have. And let's start with that because we've spent 6 days with them. We've developed a trust. We've developed a relationship. So we're better able to help steer or gently guide the mm-hmm. families in a direction, or we can understand where they need to go or what they want to do and better partner with them on their next few steps.
Sounds like, you know, you called all the kids that have gone through your retreat your kids. So it sounds like you've been collecting them over time. I'm assuming that you have.
Yes. I have tons of, and I just call my moms, my dads, my kids. Yes.
Amazing. I love the fact that you let the volunteers, them come back and volunteer and play a part. I think that's amazing too. What would you say is the future of Project Sanctuary? I know you kind of hinted there just for a second of some things that you would love to do, but what are you guys thinking about now of maybe the next level or maybe some of the things that you would like to evolve into?
So really quality programming, making sure that we're reinvesting back in our people, our staff, our team, education, making sure we're providing the best retreats possible. We're growing the family support program, which is the outreach. We're doing some resource weekends so that we work with other larger national nonprofits. And instead of it being a resource weekend in the typical model, where you go and you get a bunch of pamphlets and it's really impersonal, we spend the first mm-hmm. night working with the families goal setting and recognizing what their mm-hmm. obstacles are. And then we're better able to say, okay, you need to follow up with USO tomorrow. You need to follow up with Cohen tomorrow. Hey, make sure you speak to this person. So each national mm-hmm. Service organization is able to tell a little bit about what they do, but then set aside time to actually work with the families in the room to get them where they need to go. So we sort of turned the model upside down and the focus is more on the family or the veteran who's coming to these resource weekends. And in that way, we're mm-hmm. better able to serve those communities and those veterans in that area. And then again, just listening to the families, because the conflicts have been going on for 18 years. Of course, everyone's a little more heightened alert right now because of everything that's going on. And just making sure that we're present and we're there for our families and we're meeting the needs today, what they're facing.
So how long have you been doing Project Sanctuary?
I feel like I've been doing it for about 400 years, but all honesty, we're in our 13th year.
13th year, which is still, it probably does feel like 400 years. 13 years is a long time. When you think about American culture and what we've been doing as a military community, you know, we've been at war in some capacity for the last, 17, 18, 19 years now. So I was going to ask, what have you noticed? Is there any trends or what you've noticed in families throughout those 13 years with the ongoing tempo that we've had? You know, when you talk about the Gulf War, when you talk about pre-9/11, there was kind of some chunks of time that were peacetime where there wasn't quite the tempo that we have now. And I know from my perspective, I'm seeing just an increased weariness that's happening in families. We're starting to now see the impact of 9/11 and those years after in some of our families now. So I'm super curious of what you guys are seeing after serving for 13 years. What are some of the trends that you're seeing maybe in the families coming through? And are they different from the ones that you had first coming through?
Yeah. So when I first came through, honestly, I couldn't get a family to sit down and talk to a counselor. I remember one specific retreat, I always had counselors available and they would do what they could, but the families were a little less engaged. They were good with the classes and the recreation. And one retreat, we had a reporter come and wow, they opened up and talked to the reporter. And I'm like, okay, you guys have got it in you. You can do this. Now they're the counselors. I've had to double the counseling team. They walk through the doors. They know they are weary. They want help. They want to do better for their family. They want to set a better example. So I've watched that. So there's a lot of donor fatigue on the other end of running a nonprofit because we have been at war and through conflicts and deploying for 18 years. But the families are also pretty tired. Those that are still in and even the veterans, they're weary just simply because of the number of VA appointments. I hear a lot of times I'd love to come back and volunteer, but my schedule's slam packed full with medical appointments, or I've got to be able to take my spouse here or there. So they are tired, but they're also amazing families. They're resilient. A lot of times when you just give them that little bit of hope or that avenue, they're going to exceed all expectation. And those are, they come back and they help other families and they provide that hope and that spark. So a lot of times, even though they're weary, they're battle hardened. They're not giving up and they're going to find a way to make it work and make a difference.
It's interesting. When you were talking, I was thinking about my interview with Angela Duckworth, who wrote Grit. And we were talking about how she says, which I think you and I would both agree that military families, veteran families, even first responder families are some of the grittiest people I've ever met. It's such an honor to work with all of them. And but she defines grit as somebody that has, it's not based off of talent. It's not based off of skill. It's not even based on how smart you are. It's about the passion that you have, plus the perseverance, which is where we typically kind of camp out with resilience, is kind of that similar perseverance develops that grit in someone's life. And so when I was listening to you talk, I think about how so many of these families, you know, yes, we've had to be resilient and we've had to persevere the constant tempo and experience that weariness over time. But I wonder if what you're seeing as far as their willingness to come and actually acknowledge it and ask for the help with it. But equal to that is that passion, right? The passion, you have to find passion somewhere. You have to dig deep somewhere to go, why am I going to continue? Because if I feel like I have no choice but to persevere, I'm going to have to fuel it with passion for something. So whether it's passion to keep your family together, whether it's passion to come back and serve another family that's struggling through volunteering, through your organization, there's something about the way that you said that, where I wonder if that grit that we're seeing is them being weary, but they're bringing some level of passion with them too. Does that make any sense?
It does. It does. And another way we like to look at it is through connectedness. So with our Project Sanctuary, we provide a safe opportunity for them to remember who they are and what they want. So a lot of times it's just giving them that space to reconnect with themselves and reconnect with their passion and then reconnect with their family and that passion. So it's, and then reconnect with the community. It is so important for us all to feel connected and together. And through that, I believe comes the passion, the hope, the healing that they need. Everybody knows what they need internally, what they need to heal. It's just granting them permission and giving them the opportunity.
I think that's a very powerful statement. And I agree with that. You're right. People do know, if you ask, like, you know what that first step is. It's just, do you know how to take it? Do you know where to go to get it? And I'm so thrilled that you guys are giving all these families exactly what they need. If somebody is interested in being a part of what you're doing in 2020, what would you suggest? Where would you have them go?
Well, our website's a fabulous place to start. So that's projectsanctuary.us. Also need to point out, it's not just quote unquote mom, dad, two kid family. We also take single veterans, active duty. We just ask them to bring whoever their support system is, whether that's a battle buddy, a friend, a parent, a sibling. Sometimes it's just your dog. And if that's your family and that's your, then that's fine. You come as you are. We don't question the family dynamics or who supports you. So that's all open. So we do serve a lot of singles. But ProjectSanctuary.us, of course, we're all over social media and we're always available.
If they call or if they reach out and say that they would like a retreat, how do they do that? Do they enroll online? Do they call you guys? Is there a screening? What can they expect?
Yeah, don't call us. No, through our website, there's an application at the very top of the page. It's like, need an application, click here. And there's also links, contact us if you just need support or you just need direction and you're not interested in a retreat, that's okay too. We don't have the ability to say no to families, whether it's post 9/11, whether it's Vietnam, whether it's first Gulf War, our doors are open to everyone, but the link for the application's right on the website. You click on that, that'll go to myself and Kelly. Kelly is our wizard that's probably going to be the first angel that they get to talk to that's going to help answer their questions and figure out what retreat location and timing might be best for them. And then if they need resources immediately, then we make sure that we get those to them.
Is it best for them to go through the retreat and come back and volunteer, or do you allow for other volunteer opportunities?
No, we absolutely would prefer they go through the retreat first, because when you volunteer, you sort of see the magic from behind the scenes, because we're like Wizard of Oz, we're pulling lots of strings and making sure that the retreat is absolutely impactful for each individual family. So it's really important that they go through the retreat first, so they can experience it and then come back and volunteer to be able to tell the families, oh, I was in your shoes. So many families, even with all of our testimony and everything, all the videos, they drive to the retreats just in case it's a wackadoodle retreat. They can haul butt and get out of there. So a lot of times, even though we offer some airfare to some families, not everyone, but we're able to sponsor like 2 out of 10 families per retreat, they want to drive. But yeah, so it's important to have the graduate families come back and tell their stories and go, oh yeah, I drove to my retreat too. You'll be all right.
Fantastic. Heather, thank you so much for sharing what you guys are doing and for giving so much of your life and your talent to serving this population. Do you serve military, veteran, and first responders, or is it veteran and military?
It's just veteran and military, but we do often see a lot of first responders because they are also veterans.
Yes, absolutely. That's what I was thinking as well. So Heather, I just want to say thank you so much for your time today, for what you're doing. I really, really do appreciate it. I love the fact that you guys are doing so much to connect people and to keep to stay involved in their journey is so special to me. It's just such a wonderful part to just do life with people and to see them evolve and do well. And I think it's the responsible thing to do. And I think that's my favorite thing about what you guys are doing. And you have the numbers to show for it. And I'm so proud of your success. So it's been just awesome to interview you and hear more of what you're doing. Don't be surprised if you see the Weathers application come through. So...
Send it all through.
Thank you so much, Heather, for joining us.
Thank you, Corey. And thank you for everything you're doing to help spread wellness and hope and healing. So thank you.
Okay. So one of the reasons why I wanted to interview Project Sanctuary is because of my good friend, Jennifer Hamrick. Now you have heard me talk about Jennifer Hamrick because she has not only been a friend of mine for a while now, honestly, going back to before the military and even back to our undergrad years. But she's also a chaplain spouse and has joined the Life Giver team to help me out and has been doing amazing things with the Life Giver newsletter and all things to enrich your marriage. And Jennifer was the one that really encouraged me to reach out to Project Sanctuary because her family had such a fantastic experience there. So I am really, really excited to introduce everyone to Jennifer Hamrick. If you've been listening for a while, honestly, she's in the first season of the Life Giver podcast, where she shares a wealth of information on homeschooling, and we have a fantastic conversation around that. So it's not the first time she's joined the podcast, but if you are new to the podcast, this is the first time you might be meeting her. So Jennifer, welcome to the Life Giver team. Welcome to the podcast. I'm so excited to have you on, my friend.
Oh, thanks. I'm so glad to be here. Glad to be a part of the team.
I'm thankful in so many ways to have you in my life. But today we're going to talk a little bit about your experience with Project Sanctuary, which was a really just amazing experience for you. So why don't you tell everybody about how you found out about Project Sanctuary?
Okay, so initially we signed up for a retreat when we lived in Carson, at Fort Carson the first time, back when we were there together. And we forgot all about the fact that we had applied for a retreat. So fast forward a few years and we got an email that said, hey, you've been selected to have a free retreat. And you know that old saying that says, if it's too good to be true, it probably is. I ignored that email. I totally ignored it. I think about a week later, I got another email. Hey, so this is, and I don't remember who had reached out to me, but this is a legitimate retreat that we would love to send your family on. If you have any questions, do some research. And so I did the research and they were a legitimate organization. And so our family, we had four kids at the time, drove from Fort Hood up to Snow Mountain Ranch in Colorado. And oh, the snow, it was so beautiful. I was just looking back at some of the pictures and I miss snow so much. But we got to go on that retreat. It was number 80, and we're actually still connected to several of the families we did that retreat with.
So you drove all the way from Texas to Colorado to go on a retreat that you've never really been on before with people that you've never met before. How did you feel about kind of driving into this experience with everything being so new?
So with me being the free spirit in the family, I was all in. My kids were just along for the ride, free vacation. And then my husband was the nervous one. He was like, yeah, we're going to have to talk to people we don't know. He wasn't looking forward to that. But he got over that pretty quickly because the minute you pull up, they treat you like long lost family. They just make you feel right at home. They had, I can't even tell you how many volunteers. I know there were probably 15 or 20 people there making sure we had our room assignments. We had enough bedding in the cabins that we were staying in. We knew where to go for food. We knew what time to be where. They literally just took care of us top to bottom. This is towards the end of the retreat, but they even had women, or I guess they were women, make fleece blankets, and each child got to pick a fleece blanket to take home from the weekend. It was just, they just went over and above to make us feel comfortable.
Well, one of the things that really stands out to me about Project Sanctuary is that they really give you a family experience. I think it's really easy to think that, you know, there's a couples retreat here or there, or maybe a strong bonds marriage retreat that you and I are used to as a chaplain family putting on for a weekend. But it seems like it's really different for me for a nonprofit to really surround the whole family, including the kids.
Absolutely. They're not an afterthought. They're not something to put aside during the adult important session. They're actually given their own attention, their own activities that help them to develop their own communication skills, talk about things that they don't normally get to talk about, especially if they aren't around other people who are, you know, experiencing the same things. So the kids get their own special treatment. They have a blast while they're there. And they are part of the experience, not just in childcare while the parents are doing their thing.
So as you look back on that experience, that I think it was a few days, right? It's a 3 or 4 day?
It's a 6 day. It was a six day.
Yeah. Okay. So as you look back, that's a long retreat, right? Because I'm so used to retreats being a weekend. So as you look back on that experience, what's really stands out to you? Maybe how was your marriage impacted? What do you remember the most, and how did it maybe make some changes in your marriage or your family?
There are three things that stand out, and one will not apply to most people, but this was the retreat we were on when we were connected to our daughter's birth mom. So that retreat was the weekend we were on the way when we got our first communication. And then, so that whole weekend, they really try to say, please don't have your phones available. Please let this be a weekend to disconnect. And I kept telling them, I'm sorry, but I think this lady's going to call me. And so for our family, we really did have a big, big family change by adding a family member 10 weeks after that trip. So that was one thing, and it will always be tied to that. And the people there were so good about letting us have a chance to go up to the top of the mountain where we could get reception and talk to our daughter's birth mom, who's now a part of our family. And so that was one thing that I wouldn't expect everybody to deal with, but the way they handled our unique situation was so precious. One of the ways they showed us unique treatment was they gave us a family photo shoot. Everybody there ended up getting to go do a family photo shoot, and they helped us design and create our adoption announcement photo. So that was something that Project Sanctuary did for our unique family, for our unique situation. So that weekend is forever and ever etched in my mind as the first time we ever heard about our daughter. So that was a unique thing that I don't expect everybody sees.
It made such a huge difference for them to care enough about what was happening in your life that they were willing to be flexible. I know.
Oh yeah.
When I went on Trail West in Colorado, it was the same thing. I was like 2 days into the deployment, and you know, like at the very first deployment. And I remember like, I was waiting for that call from Matt that said he got there safely, right? That first call that takes like 48 hours, you know, until like 48, 72 hours. And the same thing, they would have asked us to put our phones away. But the fact that they gave me a separate room to connect with him, whether it was Skype or whatever it was at the time, it made so much difference for them to just understand my circumstances and exactly what I needed, and to understand that they could be flexible. But I look back now and I go, that flexibility and that kindness to understand what was going on in my world made all the difference in me connecting with those volunteers or whoever from that point forward.
Oh, absolutely. If we would have probably left, if we had not been able to continue on that conversation with our daughter's birth mom, we would have left. We would have just packed up the car and gone home so we could have had access. But they took care of us. They took good care of us. My second issue, and this is one of those issues that I look back, I'm like, why was that such a big deal? But it really did impact our marriage in a positive way. So my husband had a 15-month deployment. This was after that. We'd already moved to Germany and left Germany and gone to Texas. And so he was fine. Everything was settled, but something had changed in him, and this is really strange. And you're as a counselor, you'll understand. He bounces his leg. Like, he's sitting still in a chair and he bounces his leg. And then we're in the car and it's shaking the whole car. We're in a restaurant and it's shaking the table. And I spent years putting my hand on his knee, just stop. It drove me crazy. And there's a session. So the way Project Sanctuary works is they have a 2-hour session every day. It's an intensive type of thing. That day it was on PTS and the symptoms of that. And they mentioned tapping, drumming, and leg tapping as healthy outlets for stress that you can often see as a long lasting result of trauma or combat. And I was like, wait a minute, can you go back and say that again? So they did, they repeated it. And I said, so if that's going on, what are you supposed to do? And they said, oh, you can just recognize that it's a healthy outlet and that that service member, that veteran is releasing tension in a healthy way. And I went, okay, that's something I can get over. I can accept that he is doing something to release tension. It's part of who he is. He's a little different than he was before the deployment. And I don't need to tell him to stop doing that. That's a healthy mechanism. And I didn't appreciate that before. It would have been very nice to know beforehand, but I didn't.
That's such a subtle thing, right? Like, it sounds like a small thing, but it's a huge thing, because there's a difference between stopping something that was a release for him and that was getting that tension out because you just didn't understand, right? So giving him that permission, even in that subtle way, I think is so amazing that you point that out. And it's not something that I have thought about before, not just the leg, the restless leg, but also the power of the subtle permissions that we give our spouse to be a little bit different or to express themselves a little bit differently. I mean, sometimes it takes the smallest thing. It can be a hand on your back, or it could be, you know, Matt loves for me to scratch the back of his head, you know, or just being able to give that permission for him to say, you know, that's a healthy release, that he's getting that tension out, and that gives him permission to just be okay.
Exactly. And it gave me, knowing that it was there for a purpose, gave me grace for him to choose to do that. Or he wasn't choosing it. It was just natural. It gave me permission to give him grace. And I just have a lot more patience for that than I did before.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Okay. You had a third one?
I do. I have one more. I don't know if you remember, but in Colorado, if you looked at the backyards, there was only one pristine green patch of grass in that whole neighborhood, and it was mine.
I do, because we my boys played in that grass. Yes.
Yes. And so I on my hands and knees picking out weeds and throwing them over the fence and making sure my little patch of grass is green. My dad is a professional landscaper, and I just loved my little patch of grass. It was not very big, but it was beautiful, bright green. And he came home. And I think he came home in February. So, you know, by the time in Colorado, it was grass time, grass mowing time. I looked out one day and he was mowing the grass and we got into a fight. Let's just put it that way. And he could not understand why I was so mad. He was trying to do something nice for me, but I was very, very angry. And in the moment, I didn't know. And I don't know why I was mad, or I didn't know why I was mad. And it wasn't until the Project Sanctuary retreat where they talked about that the serving spouse will have some traumatic things or some changes in them as well. And I was able to take what they said and apply it to this incident. I got mad because he touched something that was sacred. It was a sacred space, the way you describe it in your book. It was a sacred space to me. And he got involved. And I was very particular about the way I mowed it. It sounds so silly when I look back at it now, but it was what I had taken care of and nurtured, and he was touching my grass. And looking back at that time at Project Sanctuary, where they told me that I had permission to have that reaction to him touching the grass, was great, because he was in the room and he was able to go, that's why you got so mad. So he was able to look back and have grace on that situation, where in the moment, neither one of us were very grateful.
You know, but when I think back to, you know, you and I were both stationed in Colorado together, which was amazing. You mentored me so much during that time. But when I look back, you know, my kids were a little bit younger than your kids, but your kids were still young. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I imagine you going out into the grass and that being cathartic, and it being a place where you had control. Like, you have control over taking weeds out of the yard. You have control over when and how you mow the grass. And I think as a mom who is taking care of small children during a deployment, there's so much you're out of control with your kids on, right?
Exactly.
And so I look back on that time, and I saw you as somebody who was just really thriving during the deployment, but I could totally see that being that cathartic space for you. And for him to come home, and even though he, out of just a great place in his heart, was wanting to serve you,
absolutely,
it was messing with something that you had a lot of control and territory over.
Exactly. Exactly. In a similar situation, it took a long time with me to be okay with him driving the car with us in it. I had control over who drove the kids around for 15 months, and that was me. Nobody else drove my kids anywhere else. And so for him to get back in the car behind the wheel, I had physical reactions of fear when he was behind the wheel. He's a better driver than I am. He's very safe. But there was just something in that. And the Project Sanctuary session on how the supporting spouse. I think I said that wrong a little bit earlier too.
The
supporting spouse can have those physiological reactions as well, even though I didn't see combat, even though I didn't see my friends endure, you know, the kind of pain that Matt did, I still had legitimate reactions to things because of the deployment.
That is so powerful. And I would just want to point out that you and I are both chaplain spouses, married to chaplains. And you know, we tend to think sometimes that we have to have the answers or that we, you know, are here to serve others, you know, constantly feeling like that's just what we felt led to do and why we came in the military in the first place and that we're here to serve others. And so for me, the power of, you know, being able to go to a retreat as a chaplain family and be served, you know, we use the phrase care for the caregiver, right? It's just as powerful for veterans and caregivers of veterans to have someone take care of them. And I think chaplain families are the same way. At some point to be able to just stop and just be a normal person that's not the chaplain, that's not the chaplain spouse, to be able to let other people teach us or serve us is equally powerful. So when I hear those three things that they did for you, it was also maybe the ability to just kind of take off the role that you guys were playing and let somebody else teach you guys. And it makes me that much more excited to sign up for the retreat myself because
you have to.
Because everybody, no matter what your skill set is, no matter what you're talented in, needs someone to take care of you every now and then.
Yes. Even though that takes an act of will to sit back and be served, it's necessary.
Well, Jennifer, I love you so much. Thank you for encouraging me to interview Heather. Thank you for being willing to take care of yourself and take care of your marriage by doing things like the retreat. And also for serving alongside me as we serve so many other families that also give so much. So I love you, friend. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Life Giver podcast. If you're enjoying these conversations as being free of advertising or sponsorship, please help me by spreading the word to other military and first responder families that might benefit from the show. If you'd like to find out more about me or Life Giver, you can find more information at www.coreyweathers.com or life-giver.org.